Senate please come to order? The first item of business was reports from standing committees.
February 26, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 105, Engrossed, ABLE Act, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, and Ross. Excused, Senator Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman. February 26, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 117, Pesticide Applicator Certification Program Funding, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, and Ross. Noes, Senators Perkins and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman. February 26, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 74, Engrossed, Upper Payment Limit Program Public Nursing Homes, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman. February 26, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 57, Engrossed, Upper Payment Limit Program, Private Hospitals, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Any further? Nothing else? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself back in the committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. Senator Kraft.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 36. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 36, Livestock Dealers, an act relating to livestock dealers, sponsored by Representative McKim, was referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Geis. Senator Emmerich, acting chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Chairman, this is kind of a cleanup bill, and you'll notice it's only one page. And on the back, page 2, we're deleting on line 4, this paragraph is repealed effective June 30th, 2016, and we're doing the same thing on line 15. This is to eliminate a redundancy with sunset laws. That's all it does. It does not affect licensure, payment of fees, registration, anything of that sort. This merely removes a sunset date in two places.
Discussion on the bill.
Question.
Discussion. Question. Question having. Oh, excuse me, Ms. Senator Pappas.
I don't believe the bill has been moved.
Senator Emmerich.
Mea culpa. Madam Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a due pass on House Bill 36.
Are you ready for the question on the motion?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 36, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 36 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 43. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 43, Concealed Weapons Military Applicant, an act relating to concealed weapons, sponsored by Representative Harshman, was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred, or which returned a committee report recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, and Von Flatern. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Madam Chairman, I move House. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I requested to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 43. To present that bill will be Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins.
Madam Chairman, I move House Bill 43 and ask the body's favorable approval. All you've got in this bill is a simplification for members of the military to, as they either apply for or seek a concealed carry permit. And so what we've got in here is you've got folks that have maybe from Wyoming that are stationed various other places around the world. Obviously, in military training, even at the most basic level, regardless of most classification, with maybe a very, very few instances out there, members of the military have probably more firearms training than most any other citizen that would be carrying outside of perhaps law enforcement for carrying concealed permits. And so what we have here is simply a process and an opportunity for these individuals to be able to have their concealed carry permits, that they can do it from wherever they're stationed, and provides a situation where they can come through and by verifying that they are that they're in the military, that they verify their proof of residency, whether it's here or that they verify their and send it in a notarized affidavit. In doing that, they can either renew or apply for and receive a concealed weapons carry permit. And with that, that's my experience of the bill. Stand for questions. There are none. I'd call for the question.
Discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 43. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 43 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 76. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 76, Designated Caregiver, an act relating to public health and safety, sponsored by Representative Harvey, was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, I move within Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 76 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment, and I yield to Senator Landon for a brief explanation of this good little House bill.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As you are very well aware, because obviously you're on this bill too, Madam Chairman, this is all about an opportunity to help us shore up some difficulties in our health care system. As we know, there's a lot of them out there. You know, fellow senators, sometimes these sorts of issues come along and bills to fix them really resonate with you. And I find myself in that situation today. What this bill does, if we had it a few months back, it would have been so helpful to me and my family. What it does, fellow senators, is that it provides for Wyoming caregivers. We have as many as 66,000 of them out across the state taking care of family, friends, neighbors. And what this does is set up an opportunity for somebody when they're admitted to a health care facility to be able to designate a caregiver. Where that would have helped me and my family is the fact that I was 200 miles away from my folks who lived up in the northern reaches of Fremont County, and I was way down in the center part of the state. Well, they had some neighbors and friends who were willing to look in on them, but because of HIPAA regulations, et cetera, the caregivers were unable to get direct communication from the hospitals out there. House Bill 76 just seeks to improve that coordination with these designated caregivers. I won't spend a lot of time going through the bill. I provided you with some information and some background that I hope you will find helpful. I'll just touch on a couple of provisions in the bill, walk you through it real quickly, Madam Chair. What we're doing under Chapter 30 is creating the Wyoming Caregiver Act. You'll notice on pages 2 to 4, we provide some definitions of aftercare, a definition for caregiver. We help you understand who this representative of the patient is. That could be a legal guardian. It could be someone who holds a medical or legal power of attorney, or is a representative named in an advanced care directive, which my good friend from Natrona County deals with all the time. This is somebody then who the hospital would contact upon the patient being released from that hospital. If you go to pages 4 through 6, that's where we talk about the designation of the caregivers by hospital patients. That's where the patient is given the opportunity. It's not mandatory, but they're given the opportunity to designate who this caregiver is. If you go to page 6, we talk about how the hospital is to notify that caregiver. If you look at page 7, consultation with caregiver by the hospital and the discharge plan, that helps to make sure that that caregiver knows exactly what the, you know, what that care is supposed to be. And with that, we hope that that will help to keep that patient healthy and avoid the cost of a readmission. If you go to page 7 and 8, that's the construction of the act, and then on page 8, the impact on state and federal program funding. It's a good little bill, fellow senators. I think it's something that's really going to help some of our constituents out there as they attempt to take care of family and friends. And I commend the bill to you. Would be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Discussion? Questions? Ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 76, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 76 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 11. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 11, Energy Producing States Coalition Extension, an act relating to the legislature, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Cooper, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman, was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it does so with a due pass on House Bill 11, Energy Producing States Coalition Extension. So all we've done on that is to move the sunset date and to provide the money so we can join the or continue to be active in the Energy Producing States Coalition. And so we originally asked for $50,000 as part of our biennium dues for this particular organization. And going back through the history of it, we realized we had never spent over $19,500 in any one year. Even a year that we forgot to extend it and had to go to the management council, we still didn't spend that much money. We don't expect to spend even this much money because we've been doing our meetings with the CSG, combined meetings when they hold them. So those legislators that are attending CSG West or CSG National at that time are paid out of a different account, and then we just pay for the rental of a room. Or if there's an individual that just goes to that meeting and is not going to the rest of CSG, then it comes out of this account. There's a couple people designated in each House to represent our state at the Energy Producing States Coalition meetings, and it's a chance for all of us to get together that do produce energy, and there's about seven states that belong to this organization, to get together and organize as far as our letter writing. And we do have a hobbyist. Hopefully he's not a hobbyist, and he's truly a lobbyist back in D.C. that also represents us on energy-producing issues. So with that, all it does is extend the next couple of years at a heck of a savings at 19.5. So stand for questions.
Questions, yeah. Or discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 11, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 11, or excuse me, House Bill 11 has passed the Senate, or has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 27. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 27, Legislative Oversight, an act relating to the legislature, sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Perkins, and Rothfuss. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator President Nicholas?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise to support it, do so with a positive recommendation with House Bill 27, Legislative Oversight. And what this does, this good little bill says that, you'll love this. You'll love this. You'll love, see, it says President. It starts as they shall have the regulation of such parts in the Capitol and its passages. That's the president needs to have that capacity. And any building in which the legislature meets while displaced from the Capitol. Here. And you need to have your president with those powers. Don't be looking at me like that. And and the Speaker Pro Tem has this on the other side. So somebody's got to control these hallways. Somebody's got to do it. It's a good bill. I urge you to support the bill.
Is there discussion on the bill? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd urge the body to vote no.
Further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of President Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 27. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
I am quite certain that the noes are very small and very loud. Division having been called, I failed to hear it. House Bill 27 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. President.
As always, there will be that small bonus for you at the end of the year.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. When the Queen rules... The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 30. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 30, Obsolete Laws, an act relating to the general revision of laws, sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Perkins, and Rothfuss. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Perkins?
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 30 and ask for your favorable consideration. We have before you obsolete laws, and let me go through this in great detail. So, as you, what this has to do with is in this particular section, we, the staff found that we, that the Wyoming Liquor Division used to be called the Wyoming Liquor Commission. And so in these statutes, you see, for example, at the top of page 3, you see commission has been changed to division. And so on line 5, you see commission has changed to division. On line 14, you see commission has changed to division. And you get the point.
Senator.
And so we continue on for a number of pages, Madam Chairman, until we get to... Basically, that's what it does. We're talking about mostly converting from commission to division throughout the bill. And probably the most of the just so you know, on page 29, section 2, that repealer is a statute that says we get 20 cents a mile reimbursement. That's been overcome by another statute years ago that allows the step auditor and just follows the rate along with state employees. And so that repeals an antiquated provision. That's what the bill does. We'll stand for questions and ask the body to vote aye.
Questions or discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of President Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 30, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 30 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill, Senator Cooper.
Madam Chair, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Fellow senators, I'd like to introduce you to the love of my life for the last 41 years, my wife Julie, who just came to see me.
Hey! Hey!
Yeah, both of them. Love of my life and my life. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome, Julie. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 80. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 80, Community College Budget Request Recalibration, an act relating to the Wyoming Community College Commission, sponsored by Representative Greer, was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Dockstader, Landon, Pappas, and Rothfuss. Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Madam Chairman, move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 80 and defer to Senator Wasserberger.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a bill that comes to us. Actually, it is individually sponsored, but it comes out of the Community College Task Force that was started from the Joint Appropriations Committee, in which I served on that. We met 4 different times across the state, and we looked at all the different issues that community colleges face, at least in funding. And this is actually about the 20th bill we came up with, or the 20th issue that we came up with. And it is actually a great compromise, I believe, and the community colleges are in support, as are the members that served on that committee, who are co-sponsors. But what I would like to talk about is a little bit about the community colleges. And to me, the community colleges are an incredible economic tool, at least for my community. Our community college is about 2 blocks away from my house. I drive by it every day. It's just been a wonderful thing for our community. And it's about jobs. And those jobs that provide welders, nurses, mechanics, either auto or diesel, that we use within our economy. And so the community colleges are near and dear to a lot of communities' hearts. One of the great things about the community colleges is those students who graduate, a high percentage of those students stay within our state and within our local communities. And so the community colleges are very vital. It also gives me the opportunity to talk about their funding. They get about 60% of their funds from general fund dollars, and then 20%, and that's about $120 million, a little bit less than that. And then 20% comes from four mills, and then the one optional mill that all the community colleges levy. My community has to be one of those that does not like to levy property tax on local industry. So they receive their funding in a lot of different ways, but usually from our county government, but also our city government, and then also from BOCES, which contributes a substantial amount to them. But then also about 20% of their revenue comes from tuition, which is also about $40 million. So their total budget right now is $194 million. And if I can, I will quickly walk you through this bill. On page one, we change the full-time equivalency slightly, and in calculating on lines eight, full-time equivalency, the census data, the student enrollment as audited by the commission shall be used. And then we go through our annual weighted average enrollment, the total of three consecutive academic years, full-time weighted equivalency enrollment in which the most recent academic year is multiplied by actually 50% or 0.5, and the immediately preceding two academic years are multiplied by 0.25. And then we go into the different, what's the difference between a local class but a distant education class, and we talk about that, where the instructor and majority of students are physically separated by time or space, and a communication source within the other than face-to-face in class instruction is used to provide synchronous instruction. And then we go into three different levels of classes on page three, lines five. Full-time weighted equivalency enrollment means full-time equivalency with credit hours for each class assigned a weighting system as follows. Line nine, each distance education class is weighted at 0.8. Each level one class credit hour shall be multiplied by one. And then on line 15, each level 2 class credit hour shall be multiplied by 1.25. Each level class 3 class credit hour by 1.5. And then on lines 21, level 1 class means a class guided by an instructor with course material via classroom lecture. So that's your regular classes. Then we go into on page 4, level 2 class. Actually, it's a higher level and it receives a little bit more funding because it has a laboratory involved, supplemented not solely based on lecture, textbook reading, field trips, writing assignments, and the use of media. At line 11, page 4, we talk about level 3 classes, and this would be essentially classes that cost more money to the local community college. For instance, your welding classes, your auto mechanics, auto body, diesel, and then also your nursing classes, which require some clinical type things. So a level 3 class receives a little bit more money. Then we go into what is called the standard budget amount, and that was, I told you earlier, their total funding is $194 million, and that increases and decreases depending upon statute 21-18203E. Then we go over to page 5. And the standard budget request submitted by the Commission for State Aid to Community Colleges under Wyoming Statute 21-18-205 for the fiscal biennium commencing July 1st, 2020, and every 4 years thereafter, over to page 6, we're going to essentially recalibrate the standard budget request every 4 years. And I think one of the problems with that could possibly be every 20 years we'll have recalibration of both our K-12 and our community college system in the same year. So if you're on the Joint Education Committee or the Recalibration Committee, you might have a long summer for that summer. But what we're trying to do here is give the community colleges a standard budget request that they can count on and that they can plan on, so that they can do this every 4 years. And that's one of the nicest things in this bill, one of the things that I like the most. So then we're page 6, line 12. Enrollment adjustment request shall be based upon changes in annual weighted average enrollment and only for variable costs. And then based upon the weighted average enrollment shall be calculated as follows. And then it goes through the different ways that it will be calculated. On page 6, lines 19, it's multiplied by a fraction, the numerator of which is the difference in the annual weighted average enrollment for the three most recent academic years. and the annual weighted average enrollment at the time of the last enrollment adjustment request submitted pursuant to this section, the denominator of which is an annual weighted average enrollment at the time of the last enrollment adjustment requested submitted pursuant to this subsection. So essentially, on page 7, before we finish the bill, the standard budget enrollment adjustment request submitted for this fiscal biennium, July 1st, 2018, shall apply to the formula. And really, essentially, what we're doing is their last request was for $14.4 million, and this requires essentially a cut of $2.4 million to $12 million. And that's where they will be above their $194 million. And at this time, I believe I've walked you through the bill, and I stand for questions.
Questions, discussion, Senator Perkins.
Madam Chairman, on page 4 on the standard budget base amount, that relates back to, can you just remind us where that comes from, which there's been some discussion. There's one that's been used for a period of time. Is that the same one, or is this the one? Is this the one from, like, I think they were at one point, they were a year ago, they were talking about using one from like just 2014 or something like that. But which base amount number is this?
Discussion. Senator Wasserberger.
You know what? I'm not sure. I'll get back to you, but I think it's 194 million. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Senator Perkins.
No, that one's in the bill. The 194 million. Where does that number come from? There's been a number we've used on as we've looked at funding, Madam Chairman, for community colleges the last several years, and there's an amount, and I'm just trying to figure out if this is the amount that we've, the kind of the base amount we've been working off of, or is this an adjustment to that base amount, if we know.
Well,
Senator Wasser.
Madam Chair, if I could get back to the good senator from Natrona County on that.
That'd be fine. Further discussion? Further discussion on the bill? Question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 80, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 80 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 57. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 57, Upper Payment Limit Program, Private Hospitals, an Act Relating to Public Welfare, sponsored by the Labor Committee, was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation of do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 57 do pass with no standing committee amendments. I'll seek to explain the bill and caution the senators that some of the explanation of this bill will carry over to the next bill, which is a companion to it. This bill, Madam Chairman, it accommodates the private hospitals. What it does, and it's a standard one, we've seen this sort of animal before, we get the hospitals to put up some non-federal money to match the federal money to carry the total Medicaid payment for their services up to the upper payment limit that the federal government has established so that we can draw down more federal money. The amount of money involved here, the current estimate, which is a little at variance, a little larger because it's more recent than the estimate on the fiscal note and the white copy, current estimate is that will be 9.7 million a biennium. Madam Chairman, there's two different ways to explain why you should vote for this bill. One of them is that you're basically ripping off the federal government for some amount. And if that appeals to you, that's a good reason to vote for the bill. The more sophisticated and probably more accurate reason, Madam Chairman, is that the federal government is recognizing that the system they have in Medicaid systematically underpays providers, causes cost shifting, causes trouble for the providers, and they're trying to do something about it, and being the federal government, they're a little cumbersome. But that's basically what these payments do. The going through the bill just very briefly, on page 7, line 10, there is a provision that exempts the publicly owned hospitals from this bill. That's there because we enacted some years ago a very similar program for the publicly owned hospitals, so they're already getting as much as they can out of this system. We're just adding the private hospitals to it, which includes some, including the one in my community, that the county owns the hospital, but they've established a nonprofit corporation to operate it and made arrangements. And that they're qualified under this rather than the publicly owned section. The assessment rate is determined by the health department, and it's the amount needed to generate, if you see further on page 7, amount of revenue needed to generate the amount not to exceed the non-federal portion of the upper payment limit gap. And the upper payment limit is basically what Medicare will pay for similar services. And then there's some restraints on it over on the next page, on page 8. There's an important provision on page 11, line 15, and that is that the quarterly payments can't be used to offset any other payment by Medicaid. That's where we're seeking to make sure that it really is for trying to close this gap. Another provision on page 12, similar nature, monies made available to this chapter shall not be used to replace other general revenues appropriated, funded by the revenue, or other revenues used to support Medicaid. Madam Chairman, violation of those provisions did get some other states in trouble. They got greedy and tried to use this as a source of general revenue for other purposes. And the feds may have been born in the dark, Madam Chairman, but they weren't born yesterday, and they put a stop to that. These are always under attack in D.C., and you may hear some of that, but that's been true for the 20 years that I've known, and except when states got really abusive, the attacks have not succeeded. Madam Chairman, it will be a state plan amendment. Health Department testified they'd get started right away, and they should have it in time to cover the quarter that starts July 1st, which is the effective date of the act. So that's taken care of. Madam Chairman, this will be a big help to some of our hospitals. It won't solve everything they would like to do, reducing their uncompensated care, but it'll sure help with the portion that is caused by the Medicaid program, Madam Chairman. And I would urge adoption of the bill and be willing to answer any questions that may come.
Questions to President Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, the bill looks like a good way to manufacture resources and money, but my curiosity is there any responsibility the state has for administering the program? And, for example, suppose the private entity does or makes an application for a 50-50 matches. So this, it looks to me like the private entity is sort of supplying what would be the state's share of a program, and then the FMAP comes down. My question is that if there is some error or accounting error, does the liability and responsibility for any truing up belong entirely to the private entity, or would the state ever find itself in a position where it would have to come in and reimburse because there was an overcharge or something like that?
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, these do rely on the Medicare cost reports, which are well known, well understood, and to the best of our knowledge, accurately compiled. It's a well-established source of information. I think Medicare does sometimes audit them. They have not proved to be a problem. There is a provision where administrative costs of the department are deducted, so we're cost neutral there. If there was an overcharge or overpayment, you're dealing with ongoing organizations, and I'm pretty sure it would be offset one way or another against future payments. I wouldn't guarantee you that the state was absolutely free of any risk here, but it's not proved to be a problem elsewhere. These are pretty standard.
President Nicholas.
Madam Chairman, that sounds like an answer that suggests that there may be some exposure, but it's unlikely. And maybe on the next reading, if we could learn if there's ever been an instance where a state has had to back up the responsibility or what that exposure could be. So at least know and have that discussion. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. On page 3, the definition of private hospital limits a lot of hospitals in the state of Wyoming. Is there a reason? I mean, it seems to me if this is a good deal for those that are not listed, that are excluded from it, maybe some of those should be included, and I'm just wondering why they are not. Is there some kind of a rule, regulation out there or something that prohibits it?
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, what it's excluding is the hospitals that are not publicly owned or operated by state or any city, town, or county, special district, et cetera. That's because those hospitals are already in a very similar program for publicly owned hospitals. They don't need that. It would be double dipping and it's basically irrelevant for them to be in this, and that's why that's there.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, for the tall senator from Bates Creek, I had understood something different. I had understood that HB 74 was a companion bill that would afford the same program to public hospitals as this bill affords to private hospitals. Am I wrong?
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, that's a little bit of a complicated question related to House Bill 74, and I think it would be in better order to discuss that when we get to House Bill 74. There's a reason for the difference, and it's pretty clear.
Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 57. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 57 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 74. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 74, Upper Payment Limit Program, Public Nursing Homes, an act relating to the Wyoming Medical Assistance and Services Act, Medicaid, sponsored by the Labor Committee. It was referred to the Appropriations Committee, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. Apologies, that was a re-referral. First referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so the recommendation that House Bill 74 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I will seek to explain it. This is the companion bill to the previous one. It's a much simpler bill because this is aimed at the publicly owned governmental nursing facilities. And that's an intergovernmental transfer, and for reasons connected with the way the feds do their laws, that's much easier to do, and you don't have to have all the features that are in the previous bill. Madam Chairman, you're talking publicly owned nursing homes here that are not adequately taken care of already. It's a voluntary program, which you can't do in the previous sector with the private sector ones, but you can with the intergovernmental transfers. The best estimates are that it will generate an additional $2 million, I believe, a year out of the feds to start with, and may eventually go as high as $14 million, because there is a mechanism for the private nursing homes to move under this program. They have to get properly associated with the hospital. The confusion over this and helping hospitals is that this program, Madam Chairman, will be a considerable help to many of our critical access hospitals, because they often own the local nursing home or have some other arrangement with them because it makes all kinds of economic sense. They can share common facilities like kitchen facilities. They frankly can share some of the more expensive nursing staff. And it makes all kinds of economic sense to co-locate them. And that's been done in a lot of our communities. And it varies. In my time in the legislature, it's varied back and forth between whether the nursing home was supporting the hospital or the hospital was supporting the nursing home, really depending on the vagaries of Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement, Madam Chairman. Right now, the hospitals are supporting the nursing homes by and large, because the nursing homes aren't being paid adequately by our Medicaid program. This will help solve that problem. The mechanisms are in principle very similar to the ones in the previous bill. That's basically the bill. We do have a committee of the whole amendment. I'd be happy to answer any questions in the bill, and if not, Madam Chairman, we'll need to go to the committee of the whole amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The question I have is, I think in our statutes there's so much a day they can charge for the nursing homes by statute, and will there be, and this extra money that might come in that we're talking about with the federal funds, is there any relationship between that? And I'm just curious, because obviously they're going to get more funding, but is it based on the rate they can charge for a nursing home so much a day per client, and does it have any effect on that?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Another question is, when we talk about government-owned nursing facilities and private nursing facilities, are those further defined in statute, or is that just a more of a generic term?
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I do not believe there is a statutory nursing home rate. I'm almost certain there is not. There are rates that are used to determine Medicaid reimbursement. Those change over time as there's rebasements. They are a bit below cost, which is a problem. And there's an upper payment limit here, same as there is for other things, and it depends on the Medicare rate, which is better than the Medicaid rate. One of the things nursing homes try to do, Madam Chairman, is to minimize their Medicaid enrollment, because they can get more out of Medicare, they can get more out of private pay. But still, the testimony in committee was that the Medicaid was 80% of their patients and 64% of their revenue, which tells you something about the problem we've got. This will help alleviate the difference between the allowable rates that are established and what we're actually paying. And what we're paying is adjusted through the rebasement process. That process is in statute, but the specific figures are not, and this doesn't require any changes in that. And a matter of fact, if you made a change, it looked like you were trying to use this to supplant existing Medicaid things, I think that's a way to get in trouble with the feds. The question about the definition of public and private, Madam Chairman, I think it is defined in the statute, but in any event, it's pretty straightforward. Private, these are skilled nursing facilities, strictly skilled nursing facilities. And the publicly owned ones are associated with hospital districts in some cases, and in some cases they're just plain, I think there's some that are just plain publicly owned. There's some private nonprofits, and they're a little different. But this is seeking to get publicly owned ones, and there is a mechanism whereby the private ones can get in under this umbrella if they choose to.
Further discussion? Senator Scott, would you care to dispense with the Committee of the Whole amendment?
Yes, Madam Chairman, if we could have that read in.
House Bill 74, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 12.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole Amendment. Madam Chairman, you'll note the sponsorship of this amendment, Committee 10, because of the need to get this to Appropriations Committee and back, we did as a Committee of the Whole Amendment rather than a committee amendment. Madam Chairman, what goes on here, frankly, is the House messed it up a little bit. They gave us a god-awful run-on sentence. This just splits it out and makes it more understandable. The LSO attorneys did their normal good work, brought it to the attention of the folks of the House that did it, and they did the work of drafting the amendments, fixed their problem, sent it down here. It is strictly grammatical and trying to make the language in the bill more understandable. I'd be happy to answer any questions. We could read it at length and discuss the grammar, Madam Chairman, but I urge the Senate to adopt it.
Questions on the grammatical corrections in Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Having heard the question, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 74, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Question
having been called, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 74, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 74 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 13. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 13, Public Records Student Communications, an act relating to public records, sponsored by the Education Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Dockstader, Landon, Pappas, and Rothfuss, Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Madam Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise report to do so with a do pass recommendation, and the Chairman defers to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I bring you House Bill 13, Public Records Student Communications. You have an engrossed copy. Madam Chairman, this legislation came from a circumstance that happened last year where there was a public records request at the university, and based on the interpretation of current statute, student emails were released as part of that public records request. There was a good bit of discussion, and we, through the Digital Information Privacy Task Force, put together a little working group which included the Wyoming Press Association, the Associated Students of the University of Wyoming, a representative on behalf of our community colleges around the state, the university, and had them sit down and work out some language that addresses this correctly, because there really wasn't any intent for a standard communication between two students to be considered a public record that has to be scrutinized for release. There are some federal statutes that preclude release of a lot of the information, but what this does then, Madam Chairman, is go into the definition of public records in the statute and clearly indicate that electronic communications solely between students attending a school in Wyoming and electronic communications solely between students attending a school in Wyoming and a sender or recipient using a non-school user address are not a public record of that school. That, by changing the definition, removes it from consideration during the scrutiny phase, which is kind of a key aspect. So even if it's shielded from release under FERPA or other laws, right now the university and the colleges would consider emails to be eligible as public records. So that means that they search all of the emails and then manually read through those emails to determine whether or not it's a releasable public record if it's eligible. This clarifies that the definition does not include student emails in the public record consideration in statute so that that gets shielded out. Madam Co-Chairman, this language was actually put together by that joint effort. There's consensus support of that by all of the involved parties. The Press Association was happy with this approach. The colleges, universities are happy with this approach, and therefore the task force supported this. I hope the body will as well. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. If not, I'd call for the question.
Discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 13, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 13 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 19. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 19, Statewide Student Assessment, an act relating to statewide student assessment sponsored by the Statewide Education Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, and returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Dockstader, Landon, Pappas, and Rothfuss, Senator Coe, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, who returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Madam Chair, we move when the Committee of the Whole rises before to do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 19. There is a standing committee amendment. I ask that it be read in at this time.
House Bill 19, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Engrossed Copy, page 1, line 14.
Madam Chairman, I would move that amendment and defer to Senator Rothfuss for an explanation of the bill and the standing committee amendment.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I drew the short straw, and I bring you House Bill 19, Statewide Student Assessment. I'm happy to walk through it with you at this point in time. You've got an engrossed copy, a green copy, is what we're working from. Madam Co-Chairman, this is this year's primary, one of the products, I should say, of the Statewide Education Accountability Select Committee. And I'll tell you the overall concept of this before we get into the details. The Select Committee in previous legislation asked that a technical advisory group specifically looking at statewide assessment was assembled. So we put together some technical experts, some folks who know the field well, and asked them to come back to us with recommendations on what we should do moving forward in the 2017-2018 school year as we move away from PAWS and start looking to other assessment systems. This legislation conforms with their recommendations and allows us then a broader range of possibilities as we move forward and really recognizes the good work that they put forward on behalf of the state of Wyoming, largely on a volunteer basis in the interim. So walking through it and looking at what it does, Madam Chairman, on page 2, we start with the duties of the state superintendent. And you can see that this is effective 2017-2018 school year. One of the things that we're doing here is cutting out some of the existing language. We're trying to, we had some language before that provided a little bit of micromanagement on what types of tests and what types of language would be used. This rolls some of that back and provides more flexibility. You can see that we're left with having a college entrance examination and a career readiness examination, but we remove a lot of the restrictions thereon. One of the key points that you may have seen some discussion on is on page 3, lines 8 and 9, the removal of "and science" here. And the question of why we would do that, it's not a removal of science. It is a repositioning of science in this statute. We have to administer as a state a science assessment in the early grade band, the mid-grade band, and then the high school grade band. So this statute this legislation proposes to make that 4, 8, and 10, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a component of the college readiness. Part of the other reason for taking it off there is that there are basically two primary college readiness tests on the marketplace right now. One of them does not have a science readiness component. So by having "and science" in there, we basically select it down to only one vendor that is able to apply. The removal, therefore, the secondary reason is to make sure that there's the possibility of at least two different vendors available. So that's going to come back in a little bit later. Madam Co-Chairman, we've got some conforming discussion as we move through with the college and career readiness. On page 4, there's language struck at the top of page 4. That eliminates the option of the compass being administered. That was a soft option to begin with, and it's still allowed, certainly, but this takes out the language that provided that previous requirement. It takes out some additional language about a computer adaptive college placement assessment. That was a required assessment for districts previously. This is going to allow that to continue, and you'll see elsewhere that we have interim assessments that are going to be optional under statute. This just removes the required administration of that computer adaptive assessment. On the middle of page 4, lines 11 through 15, it's struck language because we no longer have specifically the No Child Left Behind Act requirements. We have the Every Student Succeeds Act, so this language was redundant. Moving on to the bottom of page 4, you see that we're moving into the statutory language regarding the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act. We go on to page 5. What we see on most of page 5 is simply language cleanup, where we're going from reading to English language arts, which is a more accurate term. We see that a little bit at the bottom of page 5, but there is a substantive change on the bottom of page 5 in lines 22 and 23, which is consistent with the Technical Advisory Group on Assessments recommendations, that we're going to have our assessment administered in grades 3 through 10. It was previously 3 through 8. Now, that sounds like more testing, but we actually put into place elsewhere in the statute that you have to trim back the testing. There is a comprehensive suite that, or a series of different comprehensive suites that will be available that provide interim and summative assessment. This will allow us to take advantage of that and is consistent with the task force recommendations. On the top of page 6, you see here is where we're adding back in the science requirement in grade 10, whereas the other one would have been in grade 11. So we're adding it in as a requirement for a science assessment in grade 10. We have conforming language in the rest of page 6. On page 7, we go to duties of the State Board of Education. At the top, there was some required district benchmark adaptive assessment language for grades 1 through 8. That's being struck. You'll see later that we get into some summative assessment options that are available. And every district still is required to have a district assessment program. We're just not forcing down the details, Madam Chairman, of what that program is going to look like as much as we previously did. On page 8, Madam Chairman, you see existing language. On page 9, conforming language. We've got the science noted again on page 10. In the middle of page 9, in the C paragraph, we shift the language to the extent practical. Measure student performance in Wyoming on a comparative basis with student performance in other states. The concept there being we can't necessarily do it nationally if we use a limited consortia test. So that was overly limiting. We were trying to narrow down the limitations that we're putting on this. On page 10 is some discussion about including interim assessments aligned to the statewide content and performance standards and the summative statewide assessment. But you'll see in lines 13 through 16 some key language. The interim assessments required by the subparagraph shall be optional for school districts to administer as a part of the district assessment system. So the concept there is that we're going to have a comprehensive test suite that's going to be selected by the state and made available. The summative assessment is going to be the requirement from the state. These interim assessments are going to be handed as an option to the district, and there'll be a series of them available. So districts will have a lot of flexibility on what they choose to do or not to do. This is adding a lot of additional flexibility for what the districts can have available to them versus what we have in place right now. On page 11, this is some new key language in paragraph J. Require no more than 1% of the total pupil-teacher contact time as defined by the State Board for each school year for participation in a non-accommodated administration of the statewide summative assessment. So the idea there is we're going to put a hard limit on the amount of time for this testing, which was certainly one of the sensitivities we'd heard plenty of times in the past. We also have some new language. Many of you may have heard complaints from school districts about the timing of the statewide summative assessment. So you see on lines 6 and 7 that it shall be administered as late as practical in the instructional year, while also on lines 8 and 9, allows for the return of results in sufficient time for schools and districts to utilize the results for improvement strategies. That's an attempt at constraint so that we can try and have it as late in the year as possible so we're sensitive to the entire year's instruction, while at the same time trying to assure that we get the results back, Madam Chairman, as quickly as possible so that we can use those in the fall when school starts back up. Bottom of page 11, we start on the duties of the boards of trustees of the school districts. And a lot of this is elimination. You'll see on page 12, we're eliminating the requirement for specific benchmark adaptive testing. Again, we're going to hand over some options that can be used in the district assessment, but we remove a lot of the requirements for what those look like. So tools will be provided, but the districts will be able to choose their own assessment approach for most of what they're doing as we move forward, again, consistent with the technical advisory group's discussion. On page 13, you see some discussion of the ACT, college entrance examination, or some other type of college readiness and career readiness, the administration of that and the details for how the district will administer that. And then moving on to page 14, we have a repealer, which we're going to come back to right there on section 2 repealer. I'm going to get to that when we get to the amendment, the standing committee amendment, but I'll come back to that in a moment. Bottom of page 14, reinstates this advisory committee. And the concept of this reinstatement, you can see, is that this advisory committee is going to begin to spend some time looking at some of the questions that have not been answered yet, particular to testing related to, say, special education testing or tests that we haven't identified, alternative school testing, and other such things. Page 15 in paragraph B discusses the fact that the Legislative Service Office shall staff that advisory committee. That's consistent with what we're doing right now. In section 4 at the bottom of page 15, we see the State Board of Education, through the state, shall begin development of that student assessment system, meeting the requirements that we've laid out. 16 paragraph B indicates that they'll release the request for proposals and work with the Wyoming Assessment Task Force to facilitate the implementation of that new test. And I forgot to mention it, but on line 4 on page 16, the intent of this is a new testing system in place, statewide testing system in place for the 2017-2018 school year, just to clarify. The results of that RFP will go to the Joint Education Interim Committee. That's what you see in paragraph C at the bottom. On to page 17 in section 5, it goes to that specific tasking of that assessment task force that we reestablished previously, and you'll see in paragraph B the requirements that are put on that assessment task force for this next interim, which is specialty assessments, alternative assessments, English language proficiency, literacy, etc. Page 18, we see recommendations and reporting requirements. Bottom of page 18 in section 6 is a $10,000 appropriation to facilitate the operations of the specialty assessment committees. And page 19, you simply see an enactment clause of when this will go into effect. So that's the bill, Madam Chairman. Now I want to get into a couple of changes that come from the Standing Committee Amendment. That Standing Committee Amendment number one on House Bill 19 has already been moved and read in, so I'll address it right now. There's two main concepts in this. As this bill stands right now, all of the reporting goes to the Joint Education Committee. One of the changes the House made to the recommendations by the Select Education Accountability Committee was that they eliminate the Select Education Accountability Committee. So what most of the amendment that you have in the Standing Committee does is go in and reestablish that Select Committee. It takes it back to the form that was originally brought from the Select Committee through the Joint Education Committee, and then entered the House. So this is returning it to the point where we have a Select Education Accountability Committee to continue the work on the finalization of Phase 1 and then begin more work on Phase 2 and the system of supports that we need to have done. The rationalization from the from your Education Committee in the Senate side is that there is an awful lot of work yet to be done on education accountability. At the same time, there's an awful lot of work to be done in the Joint Education Committee, and it would be incredibly difficult for one committee to spend its time on all of these tasks. Better to focus the Select Committee's efforts specifically on accountability and reinstate that. Hopefully the body will support that. And the other aspect that I want to point out is on the Standing Committee Amendment number one, line 6, you can see this, page 14, line 7, reinsertion of a deletion, so to speak, one of the repealers. And what that did, one of the key recommendations from our technical advisory group on education accountability when they were looking at the assessments was a substantial concern over how we were using the ACT. We use the ACT for achievement, for equity, for growth, and for college readiness. Basically, we use it for everything all at once with effectively the same test score in high school in 11th grade. The concern the task force had was that it was never designed to do a growth measurement. You need 2 points to determine a growth, so you need to be able to subtract one from the other. We only take the ACT test once. It becomes difficult unless you have a test that is aligned with ACT. That test is actually available, but this would predispose us to take that if we maintained the use of the equity and growth aspect. Equity relies on growth, and the achievement, the technical advisory group was very firm on the concept that achievement should be achievement to the standards of the state. The ACT is not necessarily aligned to the standard of the state perfectly. So they were concerned that we continue to use it the way that we are, and therefore the Joint Education Committee and the Education Accountability Committee recommended that we not use the ACT test for growth, equity, and achievement, that we only use it for college readiness. So we deleted, and that's what this repealer that we're restoring does, we deleted the use of the ACT for growth, equity, and achievement, leaving it in place as our college readiness indicator. The desire of the House was to continue to use it for growth, equity, and achievement, but again, we heard testimony that the only way we could do that is by accepting one proprietary product. So it limits us to one option on our testing and basically puts us on rails to get one particular test, and it still isn't necessarily sensitive after that to the standards of the state of Wyoming. So, Madam Chairman, that's the reason that the Education Committee adopted this amendment, to put it back how it is and go with the recommendations of this technical group, or as nearly as we could, maintaining the ACT so that all of our students take the ACT, but it will be a college readiness indicator, not a growth, equity, and achievement indicator as it currently is, and we'll have to substitute in the 2017-18 some other test to measure growth, equity, and achievement in high school. Madam Chairman, that's the bill, and that's the Standing Committee Amendment. I would be happy to answer questions on either. First, obviously, on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 19, and if there aren't any questions specifically on that, I'd call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
So discussion, Senator Meyer.
Madam Chairman, on and against the amendment. And I guess the reason I'm rising against the amendment is because if you take this committee out of existence, maybe we'll get rid of some of the changes in assessment and accountability. And let me go into that, Madam Chairman, is that, and this is something that I was told 15 years ago when we started down this road, if you have a test, the teachers will teach to the test. And I thought, oh, no, they're just going to teach their class. They'll just do what they ever did every day, and that's come to school and teach the kids what they need to know. Madam Chairman, that's not the test. Every time we change the test down here, the first thing that happens is that the teachers start teaching toward the test. And then the administration decides, well, we need to change the curriculum. And then the administration decides, well, we need to have collegial meetings so we can teach the teachers who teach the curriculum best how to teach other teachers that don't know how to teach the curriculum. And then there's just more time out of the classroom. And 2 years ago, we had an assessment, a change in assessment, and it was said, we'll never do this again. This is the last time we're going to change the test. And here we come back in here, and we're going to change every test. And so, Madam Chairman, I think that the House realized that problem, that the one thing that you have to have in education to make it successful is continuity. You have to understand that you have to have that continuity from your kindergarten class through your 12th grade and beyond, so you know how everything fits together. Every time you change the curriculum, change the test, you have a break in continuity, and you have to have the retraining of every teacher. You have to have new curriculum. And I pray that this is the last time we ever do this as far as changing it. So, Madam Chairman, I guess I think the House has done the right thing by stripping out that committee, putting it back into the Education Committee. So, on and against amendment.
We are on the Standing Committee amendment. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I think I would emphasize in this that one of the major difficulties we've had in our assessment system is that we keep changing the test. And by the time we figure out what the test results mean, they've changed it and they're not comparable. So if defeating this amendment will tend to stabilize the assessment test we're using so they don't get changed every few years, I think we'll get much better use out of our accountability testing. So I asked the committee, what's the evidence that this restoring this committee will lead to stability? It seems to me if you remove the people that are changing it all the time, maybe we'll have the stability we need to have a good accountability system.
Further discussion on the Standing Committee amendment. Senator Wasserberger.
You on and against the amendment. I actually serve on this committee. I kind of like to have the summer off, but and I thought long and hard about this. And one of the things that I've come to the conclusion is that for a standing committee to gain expertise, they need to be a part of these decisions. And so even though I've enjoyed serving on this committee, and this is the second time I've been on it, I do believe it needs to go back to the Joint Education Committee and that they should make those decisions so that they learn and that they know and they work that. And so I struggle, but I'm going to vote no on this.
Further discussion, Senator Coe.
Madam Chairman, thank you on and for the amendment, particularly the big part on retaining the committee. And I've been involved in it since the start of it. And remember that the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act was passed in 2011, so we've been working out there for about 4 years, 4 or 5 years. This is still a work in progress. And we haven't really touched into phase two that much. Pretty much the assessment side is phase one. But the bottom line is that there's still a lot of work to do. I think it's vital that we keep the select committee working. For continuity, for institutional memory, we aren't done with accountability. And Joint Education Committee has a laundry list of stuff that we do as well. We honestly, with the list of stuff we're looking at that we still have to do, not saying we can't do this, but it's marginal at best if we can accomplish this task as well as what the other things we have to do. So I would rise in support of the amendment. There is another standing committee member from the Appropriations Committee that still has to be dealt with, but I think it's vital that we continue this committee. If we're serious about accountability in education, folks, and I hope we still are, we have to keep this committee working. I think it's incredibly important to vote for this amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Rothfuss.
That this amendment be divided, and I'm pretty confident it's divisible because there are two different concepts in this standing committee amendment. I want to make sure they're voted on separately. Madam Chairman, I would like to make lines 6 and 7 of page 1, I would like that to be division 2. So lines 6 and 7 of page 1 would be division 2. The rest of the amendment would be division 1. And, Madam Chairman, for clarification, the discussions we've had so far have been on division 1, which relates to the continuation of the select committee. Division 2, just to remind people, and we can get to it afterwards, is that nuance about how ACT is used in the education accountability model, whether or not it conforms with the recommendations of the advisory group. So, if that's divisible, Madam Chairman.
It would appear to be divisible, so we are at this point in time on Division 1 to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Is there further discussion on Division 1? Senator Landon.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Just real quickly on and for the amendment, I understand some of the heartburn that has come about the past couple of years. I tend to share some of that. I understand the frustration with changes in curriculum and changes in assessments. And, you know, that to be real truthful, Madam Chairman, that's really part of what goes on in education. That's part of the ever-changing landscape and the advancements that we have and the expectations change because of advancements in what we learn and what we do. I would just say this. I've served on two or three of these committees for the past 4 or 5 years, and the lift is heavy. This represents a huge portion of what we spend every year down here. I think it's important that we have some institutional memory that the chairman referred to in order to get us past what is a little bit past halfway done. This assessment work that we've been doing, which is going to hold the feet to the fire out there, really needs our attention. And frankly, if you look at the list of things that's being asked of the Joint Education Committee going into this next interim, it is a long list. And so on and for the amendment. Thank you.
Senator Meyer, we're discussing Division 1.
ACT. Is this the ACT Division 1?
No.
This is the other one.
No.
Okay. All right. Vote her down, Madam Chairman.
Further discussion on Division 1, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm just standing to clarify that Division 1 was the division about the continuation of the Select Committee on Education Accountability, and I would urge the body to support Division 1.
We are on Division 1 to Standing Committee 1, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Is there further discussion? Question having been called on Division 1, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor of Division 1 to Standing Committee 1, please stand.
No is like a louder word.
Oh,
No, that's a better word.
Well, when it's right here.
18. All those opposed, please stand.
How many?
You guys break my heart. You're scared of my heart. You're leaving me.
11. Division 1 to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We are now on Division 2.
Question.
Question having been called. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I would question this division as well. Madam Chairman, and sometimes I get lost in the nuances of what it is, but I think using the ACT test has considerable value and should be used to assess some of the progress of our schools. Because it is a national test designed to measure what students need going forward, and frankly, I think it measures not only their readiness for college, but readiness to go into a number of our higher tech work jobs that people go into. I still remember the testimony. We are working up the success curriculum for the Hathaway Scholarship, where the industry came up and said, you need the same kind of academic standards for people going into vocational careers these days as you do for anybody else. And the ACT test, the national test, I don't see any evidence it's been dumbed down to support other objectives, and I would like to see us continue to use it for a wide range of purposes, Madam Chairman.
Further discussion on Division 2. Senator Meyer.
Just rise for clarification information. So I understand if we pass this, we're going to have two options. And so the ACT and some other option that we don't know what it is. And I guess, does this preclude us from making the decision that we're going to have two options and actually do the ACT test when we compare it to something that I haven't any idea, and I don't know if anybody else does, what it could be? Just wondering what that could be, Madam Chairman, that I'm buying. Am I buying a pig in a poke? Or am I just, what is it?
Further discussion on Division 2. Senator Landon.
Want to tell me what a pig in a poke is?
Madam Chairman, thank you. And to my tall friend from around the corner in Bates Hole, I had a lot of the same sentiments that you had. We yesterday spent a lot of time in committee visiting about this very issue, and I was really struggling to get there as well. But I have been led to understand, and I really have been convinced that my marriage to the ACT in my mind, that's the test we're using for college readiness, simply doesn't cover all the bases that it needs to. That particular proprietary institution is working on some of these growth and achievement things that my good friend from Laramie spoke of earlier. Chances are we're going to go down that path that is going to lead us back into that suite of tests developed by that particular vendor. But what we did to our statutes earlier, you might recall, is to open that up so that we can go to a bid process. That's a very expensive test. We believe that is a readiness exam, and it doesn't do all the things that might be necessary at that 11th grade level to measure the other things that we would like to have measured. And so that's the issue. We think certainly there's a lot of use for the ACT exam. I spent a lot of my career at the next level, and we certainly rely heavily on it. But it just simply doesn't do all of the things that we probably need to have done with respect to assessing growth and achievement and grading schools out there.
Further discussion, Senator Meyer.
Madam Chairman, now I'm even more alarmed at what we might be doing, because now we're going to have the teachers and curriculum developed for both the ACT test and some other test. And so now they're going to have a dual purpose, because they will teach and to the test. and they will develop curriculum to the test. And now they have two tests to teach and develop curriculum to because they all want to do well on the test, Madam Chairman.
Senator Wasserberger.
I would like to state it, and I believe that that national test is a great test, but testimony from our assessment expert was that it did not measure Wyoming standards, that it measured about 70% of our standards, and if you're going to have a test used, it should measure 100% of your standards. What the ACT does measure is the probability of success at the college level. That's what it measures. And so the higher the score, the more likely you will be successful in college.
Further discussion, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I want to clarify a couple of things that might be confusing on how this is laid out. If voting for this amendment would not eliminate the administration of the ACT test. It is, we're using it statewide. We're one of the states that administers it to all of our students. There is nobody on either of the committees, to the best of my knowledge, that thinks that's a bad idea, whether it's the accountability or the joint education. So there's full support for ACT administration. The nuance here is, do we use ACT to measure just college readiness, which is what the test is designed for, and our model includes a college readiness component for the accountability model, or do we also use it for growth, equity, and achievement, which it was not designed for? Ninth grade and 10th grade, we will administer a test that does growth, education, and achievement. No question about it, so we'll measure our high schools. That's already on tap. The question is, do we use the ACT for growth, equity, and achievement, or just for readiness? I urge the body to vote for this amendment, which means we just use it for readiness, which it's designed for, and our experts suggest that's an appropriate use of the test. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Further discussion? We are on Division 2 to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Division 2 to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We are back on the bill. Question having... Oh, excuse me. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, it must be 3:30 on Friday afternoon, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, a question of the carrier of this bill. And as I'm looking on page 9, line 15, it says, to the extent practical, measure student performance in Wyoming on a comparative basis with student performance in other states. And I've heard from some people, and I've looked back at some of the testimony. We really wanted to try to be as close as we could in comparable testing to other states, yet you put in language like, to the extent practicable. Are you just trying to get around it? I think you should say you shall do it, if that's what you want to do. It seems to me that if you don't do that, you've created a loophole here.
For the discussion, Senator Perkins.
I just had a couple. I think these are pretty simple questions, but on page 3, you've got talking about the college entrance examination testing English reading, writing, and mathematics. And then elsewhere using the term English language arts and mathematics. Is there a difference? And if so, I'd like to understand what that is. And then if I understand the limitation on page 12 where it says no more required, this is limitation on testing that is referred to. It says no more than 1%. And as I, if I remember right, the school year is about 175 days, so 1% would mean that under this bill, testing would be limited to 1.75 days. Is that correct?
Senator Wasserberger.
Quick question. My question is, I thought the task force that was drawn up for the accountability group, the citizens task force essentially, recommended that we test 3 through 8 and once in 9th grade. And then And so I'm questioning as to why we're testing in 10th and 11th grade. But I'd also like to ask the question that the Every Student Succeeds Act recommends that we test 3 through 8 and then once at the high school level. And so I'm asking, after spending considerable time on the campaign trail getting beat up for my involvement in PAWS and setting up the assessment system that we have today, why we continue to test more than what federal requirements are and what the Citizens Task Force recommended.
Further, Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a question on page 8. This is lines 12, 13, 14, when it talks about a statewide assessment system, a coherent system of measures, et cetera. And I don't understand all the nomenclature necessarily, but I understand there are two of these systems being marketed, one of which is adaptive. That is, the questions get harder as you go along, as you answer more questions correctly, which my district feels gives them far more information about the student. And there's another test that is assessment instrument. We don't say test anymore, right? Assessment instrument that is not adaptive. And they're concerned because at some point the state's going to pick one or the other. The concern is, without specifying that it may be adaptive, that we may lock ourselves into the one and exclude the other. That's my question. I'm just looking for language that will reassure my district that there will genuinely be a horse race between these two systems.
Further discussion. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Let me go through and address those points. To the good majority floor leader on page 9, to the extent practical, measure student performance and why I'm going to compare to basis with student performance in other states. The concept there is not to take off the table a unique Wyoming solution at this point in time. So the language was created more flexible at the request of the Technical Advisory Committee so that when they put out a request for proposals, everything can be on the table. The desire, and you saw in the previous language, was basically a shall. As this is written, it really is trying to explore possibilities, but recognizing that that's a valuable thing to the state of Wyoming, to either be able to look in a regional group. So some of these consortia might be 20 states or something along those lines. There are small consortia forming where maybe you only have 6 states involved. So we would only be able to compare ourselves with a small number of states, but maybe enough population. That language is being tweaked to allow for more options as the State Board of Education figures out what path is the right path forward after they put out the request for proposals. To Mr. Vice President's question about the 1% being about 1.75 days, the answer is, yeah, that's about right. And I think there was 180 days of contract. I think the contact days was close to 170, but I'd have to look that up and check. But you are reading that correctly and interpreting that correctly, at least to a close approximation. Concerning the grades from the good senator from Campbell County, that the task force recommended 3 through 8 and 1 to 9. I'm not familiar with that recommendation from the task force. Our understanding was that the task force that we had report back to us wanted a summative assessment in 3 through 10 so that we can get the high school growth in 9 and 10 effectively, where if you do it once in 11th, you don't necessarily have that. So that was the attempt there. When you're looking at the ESSA, it's true. It specifically mirrors what was done in No Child Left Behind with 3 through 8 and once in high school, effectively, that you're allowed to test. So the way this is done effectively adds a 9th grade test. The college readiness test, the ACT, is not a required aspect of the ESSA. So we effectively add 1 grade, plus the ACT is basically our own thing, is how it works out. The value of the 9th grade to have coherence all the way through was something that the task force, the advisory group, felt was sufficiently worthwhile to measure a continuous growth, that they recommended it despite it not being a necessity under federal statute. And finally, with regard to the language, whether or not we're specifying that it wouldn't be adaptive, when adaptive might be preferential. The language that specifies adaptive has been basically removed, and the adaptive component goes typically towards the interim assessment, but there's a lot of possibilities for the interim assessment, and there's a lot of possibilities for the summative. Typically, the summative aren't adaptive, but if there was a summative that was adaptive, it would still be acceptable under this statute. Everything that was done to change the way the statute was done was trying to broaden the options available to the State Board of Education when they make the decision rather than constrain it. So either of the two main consortia tests or either of the two proprietary tests that are under development should all be eligible for consideration if this legislation is passed, and that was the intent of the way we drafted it, to make sure that the drafting of this legislation did not eliminate any of the mainstream options that are out there so that everything would be on the table. Madam Chairman, urge the body to vote aye.
Further discussion on the bill? Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 19. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Bill 19 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 58. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 58, Human Trafficking, Forfeiture of Property, an Act Relating to Human Trafficking, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. It was referred to Committee No. 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, and Von Flatern, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 58, Engrossed Human Trafficking, Forfeiture of Property, and to present that will be a good senator from the Northeast, Senator Von Flatern.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Human Trafficking, Forfeiture of Property. We saw this same bill last year. And there was a lot of open-ended aspects of it that we cleaned up. So we took it back in as an interim study for the committee itself instead of an individual bill. And we cleaned up those concerns that the body had. The first section deals with the objects that are subject to forfeiture. And then you get down there to page 3 and talk A, B, and C. And those were the problems we had last year were conveyance used by any person as a common carrier. So if your truck was pulled over and you were a common carrier and they happened to find an object in there that they were looking for, they couldn't confiscate the whole truck because you had no idea it was back there. It was packaged, prepackaged freight. So you were throwing it in your truck and delivering it. Then it goes on to talk about if the owner has knowledge. And once again, this is on page 4, top of 4, little 4, Romanet 4, talks about if the owner has knowledge of a given consent of the act of violation. So if you don't have knowledge, then they can't be confiscating your property. This could be other things involved with the crime, but not your property. And remember, this is a crime that you've already been arrested for. This is not under the asset forfeiture we discussed before. This is when you've already been arrested. Seizures without process may be made if page 5, top of, the seizure is incident to an arrest or a search. The property, little double I, the property subject to seizure has been the subject of a prior judgment in favor of the state, and so it can be forfeited at that time. If the state seeks forfeiture of property, bottom of 5, and I just hit the wrong button on my computer, the indictment or information shall contain notice to the defendant that the state seeks the forfeiture and shall specifically identify the property sought to be forfeited. So, in other words, they can't blindly take something away and then grab some other stuff. They have to tell you what they're going to forfeit, and they have to put that in writing. And then on page 6, it talks about all property shall be returned to the legal owner or person from whom it was seized unless there is a finding of verdict, a finding of guilt, so or nolo contendere, if you do go that route. And then the court shall conduct a forfeiture hearing after they've convicted you. And if you determine, that, if you can prove that you own the property, you're the landlord, you're the owner, the lien holder, if you can prove that part of it, the if the court finds under preponderance of evidence standards that you are the owner or the lien holder, you get the property back. And then on page 7, it talks about the legal interest of persons other than the party to the criminal action. Once again, we're protecting you there. If you happen to be the landlord or the owner of that property that happened to be seized by somebody else's, by somebody else's actions, then it goes on what the state needs to do following entry of preliminary order of forfeiture, which is to publish the notice of the that they're in this newspaper of general circulation, page 7. And then send notice by first-class mail, last known address of the person who, after reasonable inquiry, appears to be a potential owner or lien holder in the property. So they're making the state search out the person that may have ownership. And then you may then it goes on to describe how, as a third party, you may file a timely response and object to the forfeiture. It goes on further on. An interest in the property belonging to third party shall not be forfeited to the extent that the property party establishes a perfected lien. In other words, protecting the banks on page 9, once again, that you have a lien on that property and you weren't involved in a criminal action, you didn't know anything about it that caused the forfeiture of the asset to begin with. And then we go down to say that there's property taxes, seal, in other words, show the property. And then we talk about how the state or whoever is in the control of it, maybe DCI in our case, will maintain, seal, or otherwise assure the property is maintained under conditions reasonably necessary to preserve the property's value or may sell the property for value. This would be with, like, seizure of an asset like livestock or gold or silver. Livestock's going to age, so maybe they take the advantage of a higher price on the gold or silver at the time, but anyway, they sell it and hold the money in an account until they've settled all claims against it. The forfeiture is grossly disproportionate. We also take care of making sure that they don't seize a house because you were busted for a small amount of marijuana or some illegal drug, and then they come in and seize your house and seize your car. We have in there that the forfeiture is not grossly disproportionate to the gravity. This is on page 10. Under little h, where we talk about they can't, and we have the state has the burden of demonstrating by a preponderance of the evidence that a forfeiture is not grossly disproportionate, so you can object and they have to prove it, and then how they'll distribute the money is on page 12 and 13, that they'll pay the cost of the forfeiture proceedings, the cost of storing and maintaining the forfeiture. The amount necessary to pay court-ordered restitution shall be applied to the rest that restitution. This is if they sell the property or get or well sell the asset they for that they've taken in, and then the and then finally if the remainder exists, anything that's left over after they sell the asset is to the crime victim's compensation account. So, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions or call for the question.
Discussion, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I've got a question on page 10, lines 9 and 10. Why isn't it subject to replevin?
Senator Von Fladern.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Replevin as in somebody where you object to the, and so they can go some other route to get back the, instead of going through the courts. I looked up replevin once, and I forgot what it was. And so I'm going to look for my legal eagles to answer that question.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, there was mention of some of the proceeds of one of these forfeitures going to the crime victim's compensation account. Why doesn't it go to the common school fund of the county in which the forfeiture occurred?
Senator Von Fladern.
That's a good question from the tall senator. You know, that discussion was never, ever brought up. It was just that this is what we'll do with the if there is any funds left over after selling the asset. So, no, that discussion didn't come up.
Further discussion? Further discussion on the bill? You ready for a question on the bill? Does anyone care about the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 58, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 58 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 137. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 137, Controlled Substances Disposal, an act relating to controlled substances, sponsored by Representative Brown, was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, Kinski, and Von Flatern. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 137, Engrossed Controlled Substances Disposal. To present the bill will be President Nicholas.
President Nicholas.
Thank you. This bill is brought to you from the depths of a former speaker who went up to Gillette and retired and apparently forgot to do this bill. And we're going to carry it for him. Madam Chairman, what this bill does, it was really requested from the hospitals and folks that deal with healthcare community. And it's pretty simple. Right now there's no provision or mechanism for people to go in and collect all the drugs that may be affiliated or maybe a person that's passed away would have the medication items in their house. What this does is provide people who are qualified under the federal law to take possession of these drugs and then dispose of them so that it creates a lawful mechanism to go in and take opioids, prescription drugs, collect them up, dispose of them, and the disposal methodology is one that's outlined in federal law to make sure that they're safely discarded. But in the absence of this, healthcare providers, hospice organizations, folks that walk in and see that a decedent's medicine cabinet is full of drugs may say, well, I can't take them. And if there's no care provider who feels comfortable, then the drugs are left there. They're flushed down the toilet, they're disposed of in inappropriate ways or collected by people who shouldn't have it. And this bill allows health care providers who have qualified under the federal act to take possession of the drugs and dispose of them. I urge your support.
Question. Senator Meyer.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I could have committed an illegal act, but when my mother passed away, we just gathered them up and took them down to the police station.
President Nicholas.
Madam Chairman, Senator Meyer needs an attorney.
Madam Chairman, if this law is passed, Senator Meyer will not need an attorney because he's one of the persons that, if he's a caretaker, he did exactly what you're supposed to do. So not only as the caretaker and of his mother could he pick him up, but now he can take him to law enforcement. And under this act, law enforcement can receive those goods, and even though they have great, they might have substantial value, particularly on the street up in Goshen County. But these are value. So you're actually destroying a property, something that acquired, and this is a mechanism where that destruction can take place, and without worrying about whether or not you're destroying somebody else's property, which were drugs.
Further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 137. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 137 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion is carried.
Get all my worldly goods out of here.
What's those steps?
Wait, they are there.
Do we have some? What would you like to do next? Reports? Journal? And then do we have? Yeah. Can we have the whole report?
All right. Would the reading clerk please read the committee the whole report?
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under considerations bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 84, do pass. House Bill 8, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 87, do pass. House Bill 130, do pass. House Bill 41, do pass. House Bill 77, do pass, amended. House Bill 36, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 43, do pass. House Bill 76, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 11, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 27, do pass. House Bill 30, do pass. House Bill 80, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 57, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 74, engrossed, do pass, amended. House Bill 13, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 19, engrossed, do pass, amended. House Bill 58, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 137, engrossed, do pass. Senator Kraft, Chairman.
Senator Kraft.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. We have reports from standing committees. Thank you.
February 26, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 97, engrossed, Wolf Depredation Compensation, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
We have messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, message number 198, third reading passed, February 26, 2016. Mr. President, Senate file number 15 passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 15, Hathaway Scholarship Eligibility, ayes 60. Signed, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February 26, 2016, message number 205, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill, House Bill number 28, Cease and Transfer Program Local Government Funding, ayes 47, excused 13. February 26, 2016, message number 206, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to House Bill number 32, Insurance Regulation Parity, ayes 48, excused 12. February 26, 2016, message number 207, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to House Bill number 52, School Facilities Appropriations 3. Ayes 47, excused 13. Signed, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business. Oh, we've got some more, excuse me.
From the House of Representatives, February 26, 2016, message number 199, concurrence requested. Mr. President, the Senate file 30, Initiative Review Process, passed on third reading in an amended form. Vote, ayes 59, noes 1. Message number 200, February 26, 2016, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 38, Data Management Policies, passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, noes 1. February 26, 2016, message number 203, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 40, Abandoned Mine Land Funds, passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 54, noes 5, excused 1. February 26, 2016, message number 202, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 42, Occupational Therapy Practice Act, passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 35, noes 23, excused 2. Signed, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
We have some concurrences. Or are we still reading reports? We've got a lot of messages. Let's keep reading them.
February 26, 2016, message number 201, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 45, Rural Health Care Districts Authority, passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, noes 1. February 26, 2016, message number 204, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File number 57, Freestanding Emergency Center, passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, excused 3. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February 26, 2016, message number 208, conferees appointed, joint conference committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 36. The House conferees are Representative Stubson, Chairman, Representative Greer, and Representative Walters. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
That concludes the messages. Concurrence reports. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, are you ready with respect to concurrence report? It's message number 199 relating to Senate File 30.
I am, Mr. President.
Would the reading clerk please read in the message?
Message number 199, referencing Senate File 30, Initiative Review Process.
Senator Bebout, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the adoption of message number 199 to Senate File 30, initiative review process, and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, this bill deals with the initiative review process, and in the bill on page 2, it had that the LSO, which he shall provide the Committee of Applicants a copy of 81-101, which is sets out the how we set up our bills, an example bill. And, Mr. President, what this does, it goes to page 3 after line 23 and adds some more definitive language. And I'll read that very quickly, Mr. President. D, the Legislative Service Office shall provide the Secretary of State Office with a template of the format required for the bills required under Wyoming Statute 81-105. The Secretary of State shall make the template available to the public in electronic form on the official Secretary of State website. I think it just adds a little bit more clarification. We'll provide those people seeking an issue to review a template of what 81-105 requires. I'd ask the body to vote aye.
Aye. Thank you.
There you go. The motion is that the Senate do concur with Senate File 30. Changes from the House and as reflected in message number 199, and that you vote aye. If the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escabel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Oh.
No. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote?
Burns,
aye to no. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 27 aye, 3 no.
By your vote, you have concurred with the House amendments to Senate File 30, reflected in message number 199. Senator Case, are you prepared with respect to message number 200 relating to Senate File 38?
I am, Mr. President.
Would the reading clerk please read in the message?
Message number 200, referencing Senate File 38, Data Management Policies.
Mr. President, I would move message number 200, the concurrence request for Senate File number 38, Data Management Policies. I'd ask the Senate to vote aye. Mr. President, this doesn't change the bill at all. They've added some clarifying language on page 4, line 11, that says for purposes of this section, political subdivisions does not include any community college district or school district within the state. And, Mr. President, that doesn't affect this bill at all. They were never included in this bill. Data and privacy issues with respect to students have proceeded through the Education Committee, so that's not part of this bill at all. I ask you to vote aye.
The motion is that the Senate does concur with the House changes to Senate File 38, and you've been asked to vote aye. The chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escabel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 no.
By your vote, you have concurred with the House changes to Senate File number 38 as reflected in message number 200. Senator Case, are you prepared with respect to Senate File 42?
I am, Mr. President.
Would the reading clerk please read in the message?
Message number 202, regarding Senate File 42, Occupational Therapy Practice Act.
Mr. President, I would move message number 202, the concurrence request for Senate File 42, Occupational Therapy Practice Act, and I ask the Senate to vote no. Mr. President, I conferred with the tall senator from Bates Creek, who really carried most of the heavy lifting on, or done most of the heavy lifting on this bill, and
we're kind of under the opinion that the amendments on the first page are probably just fine, but we think they missed something on the amendment on page 2, which goes to page 7, lines 7 and 8. We think by changing this definition, they've left a void in the occupational reach with respect to when you can I think it has to do with substance abuse and whether it's alcohol or other drugs, Mr. President. We think they've left a void. We'd like to sit down with them and talk to them. So I'd ask you to vote no.
The motion is that the Senate does concur with the House changes to Senate File 42 as reflected in message number 202, and you've been asked to vote no. Roll call.
Anderson? No. Barnard? No. Bebout? No. Boner? No. Burns? No. Case? No. Christensen? No. Coe? No. Cooper? No. Kraft? No. Dockstetter? No. Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich? No. Esquivel? No. Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Kinski?
No.
Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
No.
No. Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Ross?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
No.
No. Von Plater?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 30 no.
The conference committee to Senate File 42 is as follows. Boner, Chairman, Scott, and Case. Further, we're at that order of business of signing enrolled acts. Enrolled Act number 16, Senate.
Senate Enrolled Act number 16 being original file, Senate File 15. This act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program replacing the American College Test requirements for scholarship eligibility.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 16 being original Senate File number 15. I have so signed. Is that clear the desk? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate adjourn until 10 a.m. Monday. 10 a.m. Monday, February 29th.
Announcements. Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, your Joint Judiciary Committee will meet Monday, the 29th, upon the noon recess at Jonah, H-38, to consider interim topics.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee, number 2, Appropriations, will meet with the Light Committee in L-55 at 9 a.m., Monday, February 29th. To hear the summary of our joint conference committee results. Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations.
Way to go. Senator Coe.
Mr. President, committee number 4 will meet on Monday with
our counterparts in the House to discuss interim topics upon adjournment in Jonah Room L54, whichever one that is.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet at 8 a.m. Monday morning. Confirmation hearing on Director Cox, Department of Workforce Services, and we'll meet also Monday on adjournment of both houses with our House counterparts down the House committee room, interim topics.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet 8 a.m. Monday morning in Jonah Room H36 with our counterparts in the House for the Revenue Committee to discuss interim topics.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you. The Corporations Committee will meet at noon on Monday, or it's actually 12:15 on interim topics, and that was previously noticed. But also your Select Committee on Legislative Technology and Process will meet upon adjournment Monday in Jonah Business Center Room S19 to discuss interim topics.
Any further announcements? Senator Von Flatern.
Your committee number 9, Joint Minerals Economic Development, will meet with our counterparts in Jonah Room H37, which is their House Minerals Room, Monday, 15 minutes after noon recess to do interim topics.
Any further announcements? There being none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion's been adopted. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 29th.